90. On the back stairway. Worried to distraction and still reeling from the shock of Ruska's arrest, the buzz had gone around 2 hours ago after Shikin had broken into Ruska's desk and was confirmed at evening roll call when the orderly officer pretended not to notice Ruska's absence. Niezhin almost forgot about his rendezvous with Gerasimovich. Routine had inexorably brought him back 15 minutes after roll call to the same two desks, the same open journals and the upended amplifier, still spotted with Simichka's tears. And now Gleb and Simichka were condemned to sit facing each other for another 2 hours, and tomorrow, the next day, and every day, all day long, staring at their papers so that their eyes would not meet. But the minute hand of the electric clock jumped toward 9:15, and Niezhin suddenly remembered. He was not really in the mood just at present to talk about the rational society, but maybe this was as good a time as any. He locked the left-hand side of his desk, where his more important records were kept, and, without tidying up his papers or turning off the desk lamp, went out into the hallway, cigarette in mouth. He sauntered over to the glass door that opened onto the back stairs and gave it a push. As expected, it was unlocked. Niezhin took a casual look behind him. No one to be seen along the hallway. He stepped briskly across the threshold, from wooden floor to concrete floor, keeping his hand on the door so that he could close it noiselessly, and set off up the stairs, into the gathering gloom, drawing on his cigarette occasionally to help him see his way. The Iron Mask's window was unlit. A band of fading light filtered through one of the outer windows onto the upper landing. After twice tangling with junk dumped on the staircase, Niezhin called out from the top step in a subdued voice, "Is anyone there?" A voice, which might or might not belong to Gerasimovich, called out, "Who's that?" "It's only me." Niezhin pronounced the words slowly in order to help the other man recognize him, and pulled on his cigarette so that the glow would light up his face. A narrow beam from Gerasimovich's pocket flashlight indicated the block of wood on which Niezhin had sat the day before, after the visit. Gerasimovich perched on one just like it. A throng of invisible witnesses, the surf artist's paintings, lurked on the walls around them.
"There you are, you see. After all our years in jail, we're greenhorns when it comes to conspiracy," Gerasimovich said. "We omitted to take the simplest precaution. The newcomer hasn't given himself away, but the person waiting in the dark must not call out. We should have thought of some sort of password for you to use on the stairs."
"Yes," Niezhin drawled, taking his seat. "We certainly have our work cut out. We are busy enough earning our bread and trying to save our souls, but we also have to learn to hold our own against the overfed apparatchiks of the KGB. How many of them are there? 2 million? We have to live so many lives in one lifetime. No wonder we can't keep up. How do we know Mamurin isn't lying on his bed in the dark? If he is, we might as well be having this conversation in Shikin's office."
"I made sure before coming here. He's in number 7. If he comes back, we will be aware of him first. So let's get on with it."
His words were businesslike, but he sounded tired and distracted.
"Actually, I was going to ask you to postpone our talk, but the fact is that I'll be leaving this place any day now."
"Is that definite?"
"Yes.
As a matter of fact, I will be leaving too, though not quite so soon. I haven't given satisfaction.
If only we knew that you and I will find ourselves in the same transit prison, we could have our talk then. Plenty of time for it there. But prison history teaches us never to put off a conversation."
"Yes, I've learned that lesson myself."
"All right, then. You doubt whether it's possible to construct a rational society?"
"I doubt it very much, to the point of total disbelief."
"And yet it's not at all complicated. But constructing it is a job for the elite, not the asinine hoi polloi. And the society to be constructed is not a democratic one or a socialist one. These are secondary characteristics. The society to be constructed is an intellectual one. It will, of necessity, also be rational."
"So that's it," Niezhin drawled, disappointed. "You've outlined your plan in 3 sentences.
but it would take more than 3 evenings to make sense of them. To begin with, how do you distinguish between intellectual and rational? We know all about the rational society. French rationalists have already made one great revolution. Spare us any more of that. They weren't rationalists, just windbags. The intellectuals haven't carried out their revolution yet. And they never will. They're like tadpoles, big heads and nothing else. An intellectual society, how do you visualize it? It would obviously have nothing to do with ethics and religion. Not necessarily. We can make provision for them. Make provision. But that's just what you're not doing. An intellectual society, what do we imagine it would be like? Engineers without priests. Everything functioning beautifully, a perfectly rational economy, everybody in the right job, and a rapid accumulation of all good things. But that's not enough, take it from me. Society's aims must not be purely material. Adjustments can be made later on, but for the time being, most of the countries in the world, I don't want to talk about the time being, and later on will be too late. You talk about a rational social structure. Then you tell me it will be non-socialist. Well, I don't give a damn about that. The form of property ownership is of minimal importance, and who knows which is best. But when you say not democratic, that frightens me. What does that mean? Why? Out of the pitch darkness, Gerasimovich answered precisely, choosing his words as carefully as a fastidious writer. We have been starved of freedom, so we think that freedom should have no limits. But unless limits are set to freedom, there can be no well-adjusted society. The restrictions, however, must not be of the kind that shackle us now. And people must be kept honestly informed, not deluded. We think of democracy as a sun that never sets. But what does democracy really mean? Truckling to the uncouth majority. And that means accepting mediocrity as the norm, pruning the highest and most delicate growths. The votes of 100 or 1,000 blockheads set the course for the enlightened. Nerzhin seemed to be at a loss. This is all new to me. I don't understand, don't know, must think about it. I'm used to the idea of democracy. What would we have in place of democracy? Equitable inequality. Inequality based on talent, natural or cultivated. You can please yourself whether you call it the authoritarian state or the rule of the intellectual elite. It will be ruled by selfless, completely disinterested, luminous people. Heavens above! As an ideal, that's just fine. But how is your elite to be selected? And, above all, how do you persuade the rest that this is the true elite? After all, a man's intellectual capacity isn't stamped on his brow, and honesty doesn't give off a glow. We were promised that it would be just like that under socialism. Our rulers would be clad in light, like angels. And look at the ugly customers who crawled out of the woodwork. All sorts of questions arise. What about political parties? Or rather, how do we dispense with political parties, the old type, and, heaven forfend, the new type? Mankind awaits the prophet who can tell us how to do without political parties altogether. Party membership always means levelling down to the majority, accepting discipline, saying things you don't mean. Every party warps the individual and perverts justice. The leader of the opposition criticizes the government, not because it has really made a mistake, but because, well, what else is the opposition for? There you are. You yourself are moving away from democracy and toward my system. Not really. Just a tiny bit closer, perhaps. Authoritarianism now. What are we to say about it? The state must exercise authority, of course. But what sort of authority? Moral authority. Power relying not on bayonets, but on love and respect. Able to say, fellow countrymen, you must not do this, it is wrong. So that they are all conscience-stricken and know in their hearts, this is bad, we will eschew it, we will do it no more. What other way is there? What is called authoritarianism is totalitarianism in embryo. I'd sooner have something on the Swiss model. Remember what Herzen says. The lower the authority, the more powerful it is. The most powerful is the village assembly. The most impotent man in the state is the president. All right. I'm not really serious. Perhaps you and I are being a bit premature. Rational structure. It would be more rational to discuss how to escape from the irrational. We can't even do that, although it's a more immediate concern. The voice from the darkness was unperturbed. That is, in fact, the main subject of our discussion. And, as calmly as if they were talking about changing a fused valve in a circuit, I think the time has come for us, the Russian technical intelligentsia, to change the form of government in Russia. Nerzhin was taken aback. Not that he did not trust Gerasimovich. The very look of the man had inspired a feeling of kinship, although they had, as it happened, never talked until now. But the quiet voice from the darkness, composed and somewhat solemn, sent a little shiver along Nerzhin's spine. Alas, spontaneous revolution is impossible in our own country. Even in old Russia, where those intent on subversion enjoyed almost unrestricted freedom, it took 3 years of war, and what a war, to stir up the people. While nowadays a joke at the tea table can cost you your head. What hope is there of revolution? No need for the alas, Nerzhin replied. To hell with revolution. Your elite would be the first to be massacred. Culture and beauty would be eliminated. Everything good would be destroyed. All right, forget the alas. But that's why many among us have begun to set their hopes on help from outside. That seems to me a profound and damaging mistake. What the Internationale says isn't all that stupid. We look nowhere else for deliverance. Let us win freedom with our own hands. You have to understand that the more prosperous, the more free and easy life becomes in the West, the less ready Western man is to fight for fools who have allowed themselves to be oppressed. And they are right. They haven't opened their own gates to the robber band. We have deserved our regime and leaders. We got ourselves into this mess, and we must get ourselves out of it. Their turn will come. Of course their turn will come. There is a destructive force in prosperity. To prolong it for a year, a day, a man will sacrifice not only all that belongs to others, but all that is sacred. He will defy the dictates of common prudence. They fattened Hitler. They fattened Stalin. Gave them half of Europe each. Now it's China's turn. They'll gladly surrender Turkey if that will allow them to postpone general mobilization by as much as a week. They will perish, of course they will. But we may perish first. Yes. The trouble with pinning our hopes on the Americans is that it eases our conscience and weakens our will. We win the right not to struggle, the right to submit, to take the line of least resistance and gradually degenerate. I do not agree with those who claim that over the years our people have begun to see more clearly, that something is maturing in them. Some say that it is impossible to oppress a whole people indefinitely. That's a lie. It is possible. We can see for ourselves how our people have degenerated, how uncouth they have become, how indifferent they are not only to the fate of the country, not only to the fate of their fellows, but even to their own fate and that of their children. Indifference, the organism's last self-preservative reaction, has become our defining characteristic. Hence also the popularity of vodka, unprecedented even by Russian standards. This is the terrible indifference of the man who sees his life not cracked, not chipped, but shattered, so fouled up that only alcoholic oblivion makes living still worthwhile. If vodka were prohibited, revolution would break out immediately. But while he can charge 44 rubles for a liter that costs 10 kopecks to make, the communist Shylock will not be tempted to enact a dry law. Nerzhin did not react, did not stir. Gerasimovich could hardly see his face in the dim light from the lights around the camp, reflected from the ceiling. Although he knew nothing about this man at all, he had chosen to share with him thoughts that even bosom friends would not dare whisper to each other in that country. Corrupting the people took only 30 years. Restoring them to health will take, how long? 300 years? More? That is why we must hurry. Given the impossibility of a popular revolution, the harm done by pinning our hopes on help from the outside, there remains only one way out. A palace revolt, pure and simple. As Lenin used to say, give us an organization of revolutionaries, and we will turn Russia upside down. They threw together such an organization, and they did turn Russia upside down. God forbid. I don't think the creation of such an organization would be difficult for us, with the knowledge of people we have acquired in jail, and our ability to pick out traitors at a glance. You and I, for instance, know that we can confide in each other, though we have never talked before. It would take only 3,000 to 5,000 courageous and quick-thinking men able to handle weapons, plus a few intellectuals, like those making the atom bomb. We would establish links with the military chiefs, those puffed-up chickens, to ensure their benevolent neutrality. And we would need to take out only Stalin, Molotov, Beria, and a few others, and immediately announce by radio that the whole of the upper, middle, and lower strata remain in place. Remain in place. And that is your elite. For the time being. Temporarily. That is the peculiar feature of totalitarian countries. It is difficult to carry out a coup, but once you have, ruling them could not be easier. Machiavelli said that the day after you expel the Sultan, you can worship Christ in all the mosques. Don't jump to conclusions. We can't be sure who leads and who is led. Does the Sultan lead them, or do they lead him without realizing it? As for the supposed neutrality of those wild pigs of generals, who drove whole divisions onto minefields just to save themselves from the penal battalion, they'll tear anyone to ribbons to defend their sty. And then again, Stalin will escape by a subterranean passage. And as for your 5,000 men of action, if they haven't been turned in by informants already, they'll be machine-gunned from listening posts. And anyway, Nyazhin said impatiently, there aren't another 5,000 like you, not in Russia. It's only men in prison, not so-called free men with families to care for, who can think so boldly, act so uninhibitedly, and contemplate such sacrifices. But, of course, prison is just the place from which nothing can be achieved. You invited me to pick holes in your scheme. Well, it consists of nothing but holes. Our overweening physicists and mathematicians need to learn that social activity also requires special study and special skills. You can't describe it in mathematical terms. But it isn't just that. It isn't just that. His voice was becoming too loud for the silence of the dark stairway. Alas, you've chosen the wrong person to advise you. I simply don't believe that anything good and durable can be constructed on this earth of ours. How can I set about advising you when I can't disentangle myself from my own doubts? Icily calm, Gerasimovich reminded him of Auguste Comte's assertion, before spectral analysis was invented, that mankind would never discover the chemical composition of the stars, which they promptly did. When you stride along in the exercise yard with your army coat flapping, he said, you seem quite different. Nerzhin hesitated. He remembered what Spiridon had said yesterday. Killing wolves is right, eating people isn't. And Spiridon asking an airplane to drop an atom bomb on him. His naive wisdom could be overpowering, but Nerzhin resisted it as best he could. Well, I get carried away sometimes. But your plan requires serious thought, and I can't express myself fully all at once. Do you remember Anatole France's story about the old woman of Syracuse? She prayed to the gods to grant the island's hated tyrant a long life, because experience had taught her of old that each successive tyrant was more cruel than his predecessor. Yes, our present regime is vile, but how can you be sure that what you want will be any better? Maybe it will be worse. No, you say, just because you want it to be better. But maybe those before you wanted things to be better. They sowed rye, and what came up was goosefoot. Forget about our revolution. You can look back 27 centuries. over all those twists and turns in the meaningless journey, from the hill where the she-wolf suckled the twins, from the Valley of Olives where the wonder-working dreamer rode on an ass, to our own thrilling heights, our own grim gorges, through which only self-propelled cannons grind their way in single file, to our icy mountain passes where, at 70 degrees below, the freezing wind of Oymakion blows through convicts' jackets. I can't see why we've struggled all this way, shoving one another over precipices. Poets and prophets have hymned through the centuries the shining heights of the future. Fanatics that they are, have they forgotten that on the heights hurricanes howl, vegetation is sparse, there is no water, and you can easily fall and break your neck? Shine a light, and you can see right here what may be the castle of the Holy Grail. I've seen it. Where a knight galloped up and beheld, nonsense. Nobody will ever gallop up. Nobody will behold anything. Give me my modest little valley where there's grass and water. Back to the past, Gerasimovich rapped out. If only I believed that there is any backward and forward in human history. It's like an octopus with neither back nor front. For me, there's no word so devoid of meaning as progress. What progress, Ilarion Palich? Progress from what? To what? In those 27 centuries, have people become better, kinder, or at least a bit happier? No, they've become worse, nastier, and unhappier. And all this thanks to beautiful ideas. No progress. No progress, Gerasimovich protested, forgetting the need for caution and sounding younger than his years. That's unforgivable in a man who's had something to do with physics. Do you see no difference between mechanical and electromagnetic speed? What makes you think I need airplanes? There's no healthier way to travel than on foot or on horseback. What do I need radio for? To murder the playing of great pianists? Or to send the order for my arrest to Siberia more quickly? Let them send it by postchaise. You must surely realize that energy will soon cost little or nothing, which means abundance of material goods. We will unfreeze the Arctic, warm Siberia, make the deserts green. In 20 or 30 years' time, foodstuffs will be as free as the air we breathe. Isn't that progress? Plenty doesn't mean progress. My idea of progress is not material abundance, but a general willingness to share things in short supply. But you won't achieve any of that anyway. You won't warm Siberia. You won't make the deserts bloom. It'll all be blown to bloody hell by atom bombs, and scattered to the winds by jet planes. Try to look at it objectively. It hasn't all been mistakes. We have crept slowly upward. We have blooded our tender mugs on jagged rocks, but nonetheless we are now at the head of the pass. On Oymyakon. Well, we aren't burning one another at the stake any more. Why bother with firewood when you've got gas chambers? Still, the times when the folk-meeting settled disputes with the cudgel have gone, and we have parliaments, in which reasoned argument prevails instead. Quite primitive people, after all, won the Habeas Corpus Act. And nobody orders us to consign our wives to the overlord on our wedding night. You have to be blind not to see that manners are becoming gentler, that reason is prevailing over unreason. I don't see it. That our conception of what it means to be human is maturing.
A prolonged ring from an electric bell sounded throughout the building. This meant that it was 10:45, that all secret material should be handed in to be locked away and the laboratories sealed. Both men raised their heads into the faint lamplight from the prison grounds. Gerasimovich's pince-nez glittered like two diamonds.
So then, what's your conclusion? Should we just let the planet rot? Don't you think that would be a pity?
It would be a pity,
Nyazhin whispered faintly, though there was no need to whisper now.
I feel sorry for our planet. Better to die than live to see that.
Better to prevent it than to die, Gerasimovich answered calmly.
But in these crucial years of universal destruction, or universal correction of mistakes, what other way out do you suggest? Frontline officer. veteran jailbird.
I don't know. I don't know.
In the quarter light, Nielsen's distress was evident.
Before the atom bomb, the Soviet system, the ramshackle, hide-bound, vermin-ridden Soviet system, was doomed. It could not have stood the test of time. But if our side gets the bomb, it's disaster. There is just one possibility.
What?
Gerasimovich pressed him.
Perhaps the New Age, with its globalized information. You're the one who said you didn't need radio.
No, they can jam it. I'm saying that maybe in the New Age, a new means will be discovered for the word to shatter concrete.
Completely contradicts the laws of resistance of materials.
Not to mention dialectical materialism.
So what?
Remember, in the beginning was the word.
So the word is more ancient than concrete. The word is not to be taken lightly, whereas your military coup is just impossible.
But in practical terms, how do you envisage it?
I don't know. I repeat, I don't know. It's a mystery. Mushrooms, mysteriously, may not appear after the first or second shower, but sooner or later rain brings them out in profusion. Only yesterday we could never have believed that such monsters could emerge at all, but now they are everywhere. In just the same way, noble people will suddenly spring up, and their word will shatter concrete.
Before that happens, your noble people will be carried away in hampers and baskets, weeded out, chopped up, short of a head.